6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. President Obama has joined the other six leaders of the world's richest democracies for a Group of Seven summit in Isashima, Japan, in a two-day meeting expected to focus on the global economy. Soon after arriving, President Obama had to deal with a criminal matter that outraged the Japanese public. A former U.S. Marine who works at the Kadena military base in Okinawa is suspected of raping and murdering a Japanese woman. At a joint news conference with Mr. Obama, Japan's Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, speaking through an interpreter, expressed shock of an entire nation over the crime.
I, too, feel profound resentment. We will investigate in a rigorous manner under the Japanese jurisdiction, in line with the Japanese laws, this offender who committed this self-centered and absolutely despicable crime.
Mr. Obama, for his part, promised full U.S. cooperation in the investigation. During his visit, the president plans to make a groundbreaking visit to the city of Hiroshima Friday, where the world's first atomic bomb was dropped at the end of World War II. The U.N. Security Council has lifted the last international sanctions against Liberia. The council has been progressively lifting the targeted measures imposed at the end of Liberia's civil war in 2003. Wednesday took the final step, unanimously voting to lift an arms embargo on non-state actors. Farhan Haq is a spokesman for Secretary General Ban Ki-moon.
The Secretary General notes that targeted sanctions measures have accompanied the consolidation of peace and the rebuilding of state institutions in Liberia since 2003, and that these measures have been progressively adjusted as Liberia has met the benchmarks set out by the Council.
Former President Charles Taylor set off the civil war in 1989 by leading an uprising that toppled then-President Samuel Doe. Taylor elected in 1997, fueling more conflict. This is VOA News. Azerbaijani journalist Khadija Ismailova, who worked for Radio Free Europe, has been released from custody following a decision Wednesday by the country's Supreme Court. Ismailova, an award-winning investigative reporter who published findings on the vast assets of the family of President Ilham Aliyev, was sentenced last year to 7 years in prison on charges of tax evasion and abuse of power in what many say were politically motivated charges.
I will, of course, go further to the European court and will fight until proven unguilty on all charges.
The Supreme Court, in its order, cut her sentence in half, reducing it to 3.5 years, which she will now be allowed to serve at home. The U.S. called on the Azeri government to drop all remaining charges. A Ukrainian Army helicopter pilot who spent nearly 2 years in a Russian prison returned home to a hero's welcome Wednesday after she was freed in a swap with Moscow. President Petro Poroshenko decorated Nadia Savchenko with the Hero of Ukraine Award, the country's highest honor, during a ceremony. Earlier, two alleged Russian soldiers returned to Moscow in the swap. Tens of thousands marched through the Zimbabwean capital Harare Wednesday, supporting longtime ruler President Robert Mugabe.
I am at the service of the people. If the people feel I should go, I go. But as long as I feel I can serve the people and I can do my best, as I have done in the past, I will do my best, and then when time comes, fine, I go.
Speakers said the 92-year-old Mr. Mugabe, who has ruled the country since independence in 1980, should rule for life. His ruling ZANU-PF party has been hit by infighting over his succession. Mr. Mugabe described such activity as treasonous. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon Wednesday voiced alarm at growing political tensions in the Democratic Republic of Congo, where a presidential election is supposed to take place later this year. Mr. Bond noted uncertainty over whether President Joseph Kabila will seek a third term, violating the country's constitution. In Burundi, at least three were killed in attacks across the country beset by political violence since last year's controversial decision by President Pierre Nkurunziza to seek a third term in office. Among the latest fatalities, a former army colonel, a policeman and civilian were also killed Tuesday. A court in Senegal is scheduled to deliver a verdict Monday in the trial of former Chadian dictator Issa Abre, tried on charges of crimes against humanity, torture and war crimes, before a special tribunal in Dakar. The verdict could mark the end of a battle to bring Abre to justice in Senegal, where he fled and has lived in exile since being overthrown in 1990. The Sun-powered Solar Impulse 2 aircraft has landed in the northeast U.S. state of Pennsylvania, completing the latest leg of a round-the-world fuelless flight promoting renewable energy. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA
That's
News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barte in Washington. Today is Thursday, May 26th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The Speaker of Liberia's Parliament, along with the Chairman of President Sirleaf's party, are charged with corruption.
The indictment has charged the individuals with bribery, economic sabotage, criminal facilitation, and they have been brought before the court. The sheriff of the court took them into custody. Defy valid bonds and were released by the court.
Eugene Nabo is Liberia's Minister of Information. The UN Security Council lifts a 13-year-old arms embargo against Liberia. Congolese opposition parties will rally today to demand President Kabila respects the constitution and step down. And there's controversy in Uganda over the promotion of President Museveni's son as a major general.
Yes, Major
Chris Magizi is the spokesman for the Special Command Forces of the Uganda People's Defense Forces. Mali's Sufi leaders preach against radicalization, and we'll talk about the status of African women. Those stories, plus Marco Oman's sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Speaker of Liberia's House of Representatives, along with the chairman of the ruling Unity Party, were charged yesterday for their alleged roles in the bribery scheme. Minister of Information Eugene Nabo says Senator Vonnie Sherman and Speaker Alex Taylor were charged with bribery, economic sabotage, and criminal facilitation. A report by the London-based Global Witness alleged that over $950,000 in bribes and other suspicious payments were made to top Liberian officials by the Britain-based Sibyl Mining Company and its Liberian lawyer, Vonnie Sherman. According to the report entitled The Deceivers, Sibyl Mining wanted to get the concession rights to Liberia's Wologisi iron ore. Nabwe says the investigation is ongoing and that there may be other indictments.
The indictment has charged the individuals with bribery, economic sabotage, criminal facilitation, and they have been brought before the courts. The sheriff of the court took them into custody, defied valid bonds, and were released by the courts. Now, the government of Liberia is going to pursue the case once an assignment is made. This is a part of the investigation that is still ongoing because other individuals are still being interrogated and are still being questioned. And as the determination is made of the violation of our laws, there will be more indictments.
The question that many Liberians are asking is that why is it that this particular corruption case is moving as fast as even a fast-flowing river? When you compare this to other corruption cases, there's never been this kind of fast movement. Why this particular one is moving this fast?
But the information is not very accurate that we are moving faster than in other areas. Yes, because the president has constituted this task force, has brought together investigators from the Anti-Corruption Commission and the Ministry of Justice, because in the past, some of the reasons that we have had delays has been because the two agencies were not working so closely together and were working at parallels. But with the task force umbrella that has been provided, they are working in the same room, they are working under the same umbrella, and that has caused case to move faster. So this case perhaps has received a lot of attention because of the profile of the individuals involved, but it is just a continuation of the fight against corruption, which the president has made a priority for her administration.
Some people have said that President Sirleaf is moving this fast on this particular case because she's under pressure from some donors or some foreign governments to do something, especially when they say she's about to travel. So she wants to show the international community she's fighting corruption.
It wasn't the president who wrote the Global Witness report. It wasn't the president who submitted this report that has incriminated some Liberian individuals and has caused our country's name to be put in the public space in a manner that is not too favorable. So the president is reacting to the pressure from the people of Liberia and the pressure from the international community and the pressure from all people of goodwill who are saying that corruption is endemic in our country and therefore we must act in a more decisive and comprehensive manner.
There's this concern that if you live in a glass house, do not throw stones. Is there a concern that perhaps during the trial that these people
example, the Speaker, Mr. Vani Sherman, they may also implicate other people in the government?
Well, there is no sacred cows here. So whomever is involved in defrauding the people of Liberia, involved in illegal actions, will be brought before the law. The governor of Liberia is not afraid about name-calling once there is evidence that any official of government, how be it your position or your title in society, once you are a judge or culpable, you will be brought before the law.
Eugene Nambo is Liberia's information minister. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. The Liberian government is welcoming a UN Security Council decision yesterday to lift a 13-year-old UN arms embargo against the country. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon also welcomed the move and said the sanctions have accompanied the consolidation of peace and the rebuilding of state institutions in Liberia since 2003. The Security Council, however, encouraged the Liberian government to establish the necessary framework to combat the illicit trafficking of arms and ammunition. Minister of Information Eugene Nambo says the lifting of the arms embargo comes just as the country prepares to take over its own security responsibilities when the United Nations mission in Liberia, also known as UNMIL mandate, ends on June 30 of this year.
This move by the Security Council is in line with our own plans to give capacity to our security forces who will meet very stringent requirements to be able to provide the security necessary for our country. The government of Liberia welcomes this move by the Security Council, and we remain committed to the prudent, wise, and proper use of arms that will be given to properly trained security personnel. So by the lifting of this embargo, that doesn't mean that the government of Liberia is going to randomly and arbitrarily give arms to people. No, we continue to follow a very strict regime that complies with international standards and international best practice. But we are pleased that this action by the Security Council points to the fact that our government has received the confidence of the Security Council and that we have been behaving very responsibly even during the sanctions regime.
Mr. Minister, are you suggesting that the lifting of this arms embargo is tied to the coming departure of the UN mission in Liberia? There's been this debate whether your country, your government, is ready to assume its own security responsibility.
The government is ready and willing and has already begun taking control of some of the security responsibilities of UNMIL. In fact, in most cases, our own national security apparatus have been handling national security with support from UNMIL. Yes, we have a long and short-term plan that we've worked out with the international community, where we have trained new security personnel, where we have given capacity to them in the areas of logistics and equipment. And because of the level of training that has happened over the past year or two, we are very prepared as a government to take over the security responsibilities that UNMIL has been performing.
The Security Council particularly mentioned the illicit transit of drugs.
Yes, unfortunately, Liberia, like some other countries in West Africa, has been staging posts for the transit of illicit drugs and other contraband. And we have been cooperating with our neighbors in ECOWAS and with the international community, including the government of the United States of America, to bring this to a halt. We have scored a lot of successes in curbing illicit drug trade in Liberia, but there are still challenges. And we continue to build capacity. Just last week, as you remember, the U.S. Assistant Secretary for African Affairs, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, commissioned a $5 million security communications equipment to help give capacity to the Liberian security apparatus in dealing with all of the challenges that we have. That was a giant step in the right direction, and we also believe that with the lifting of the arms embargo, we will responsibly continue to carry out the responsibilities required of the Liberian security apparatus.
Eugene Nambo is Liberia's information minister. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, May 26. Daybreak Africa time is now 14 and a half minutes past the hour. The head of the Special Command Forces of the Ugandan People's Defense Forces, Brigadier Muhoozi Kainerugaba, was officially decorated yesterday following his promotion to Major General. The Special Command Forces are in charge of protecting the president as well as the country's oil and other institutions. Kainerugaba, who is the first son of President Yoweri Museveni, was promoted alongside many other officers. In an interview with reporter Peter Clotty, Major Chris Magizi, the spokesperson for the Special Command Forces, said the allegations are unfounded.
The Special Forces is not an autonomous body within the UPDF or even independent. This is misleading information which has been deliberately put out by some elements, but it's not correct. There have been discussions by the Army leadership to expand Special Forces into a service, which means UPDF will now have three services, which will include the Land Forces, the Air Force, and the Special Forces. Discussions are still ongoing. When they are materialized and refined, it will be presented to Parliament, and the Special will be formally recognized as the third service of the UPDF.
Major General Muhuza has been criticized by some critics and opposition groups here and there, saying his promotion has not been fair and that he has not seen combat and that he appears to be enjoying some form of paternalistic promotion along the way. As a member of the Special Forces Command, you have worked with him closely. How does this criticism go in the Army?
That criticism is very, very misplaced, and it goes a long way to elaborate the nature of our local politics here. Just because Moise Kainerugaba is the son of the president, should not and must never take away his efforts as an individual, his commitment to serve the armed forces. The armed forces, actually, the option he chose among many, I think is one of the toughest options he could have gone for. He has done a very brilliant job. We didn't really have a Special Forces element talk about in the UPDF. The single-handedly spearheaded that force and ensured that it grows to what it is today. In 2013, the Special Forces of Uganda are the ones who reacted quickly to ensure that the situation in Juba in southern Sudan was contained. Because as many observers and commentators have agreed, it was a potential genocide situation. All these operations have been taking place under the direct supervision of Major General Moses, and I think he deserves credit for this.
Major Chris Magizi is the spokesperson for the Special Command Forces of the Uganda People's Defense Forces. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Kampala. Opposition groups in the Democratic Republic of Congo say their nationwide rally to force President Joseph Kabila to respect the constitution and step down at the end of his second term will be held today, Thursday. But the government has banned rallies in the North Kivu province and the city of Lubumbashi in the south. Mr. Kabila, elected since 2001, is required by the Constitution to step down this year. Martin Fayulu is leader of the Commitment for Citizenship and Development Party in the DRC. He says the president must respect the Constitution.
The purpose is to tell everybody, every Congolese, that the Constitution should be respected. We, all of us, we should be ready for Mr. Kabila to leave power on December 19 this year. And nobody can interpret the Constitution as he wants. The Constitution is clear, Mr. Kabila to leave. And we want to tell everybody that the election should take place this year. And the purpose of the rally, and also we want to tell everybody that what is going on now in Beni is not acceptable at all. And those guys should stop the massacre, and the government should protect the people of Congo.
Mr. Fayulu, I was speaking to the government minister of information about the rally, and he says that, you know, it doesn't make sense. The opposition says that it wants to protect the constitution, but yet you are not respecting the constitutional court's ruling.
I don't know what he is saying by not respecting the Constitution. We said that the Constitution said Kabila should leave on 19th December this year. The Constitution is clear and we are clear. The Constitution doesn't say that someone who is in power can go beyond the due date.
What do you make of the fact that the government is prohibiting the regions, the North Kivu province, and also protests in Lubumbashi. The government said there should be no protests there or no rallies.
And because they don't know what they are doing, because you know, demonstration is there in our constitution. The public demonstration is allowed. And I don't know those governors. One of my guys in Goma, in North Kivu, Mr. Kasekwa, Jean-Baptiste Kasekwa, was arrested on Wednesday afternoon with two guys of the UNC. And we cannot agree why people cannot stay together and discuss about the future of their country. Why only the PRD and the Kabila's people should demonstrate at any time, anywhere?
Martin Fayulu is the leader of the Commitment for Citizenship and Development Party in the DRC, who is speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. Sufi Islam leaders in Mali have created a new collective to counter what they say is an influx of foreign-sponsored radical preachers and institutions, quoting Mali's young Muslims. Katerina Hoya reports from Bamako.
Sherif Usman Madani Haidara leads prayers at the main mosque in Ségou in central Mali. Haidara has been visiting a new mosque in a different city almost every Friday. Other Sufi leaders are doing the same. They call themselves the Collective of Muslim Spiritual Leaders, or GLSM, to use the French acronym. Haidara says there has been little oversight of religious organizations funded by foreign donors. He says these institutions are largely financed by money from Gulf states, and they have brought a new ideology to Mali. In Bamako, he says radical preachers tell youth that killing non-believers will give them privileges in paradise. Killing one person will give you one villa, killing two gives you two villas. He says we're instead telling the youth that killing someone is not Islam. Aminata Diaby traveled from San village in the south to hear Haidara speak in Ségou. A true Muslim would never hurt another person, Muslim or Christian, he says. This is what Haidara said. The GLSM says some foreign-backed organizations in Mali are espousing Wahhabi beliefs that make youth more vulnerable to radicalization. One of the most influential of these charities is Al-Farouk. Saudi diplomatic cables released last year by WikiLeaks listed Al-Farouk as a group that gets funding from Saudi Arabia. Al-Farouk also gets funding from donors in Turkey, Kuwait and the UK. The NGO has spent millions of dollars building mosques, schools and health centers in Mali. Al-Farouk helped fund the University of Sahel in Bamako. Here students receive training in Islamic studies, Arabic and computer science. Many go on to study abroad in an Arabic-speaking country, in particular Saudi Arabia. The GLSM argues that the state needs to look more closely at what is being taught in these schools. But Mali is a secular state. The government is limited on how it can regulate religion. Minister of Religious Affairs, Tiano Amadou Diallo, says Mali is a poor country and these groups are building schools and mosques. They're giving the population services the government fails to provide. He says they give a poor farmer a way to send his children to study in the Gulf. But Diallo also told VOA funding for these initiatives does warrant further scrutiny. Some religious leaders say more regulation is not the answer. Some argue that Islamic education is the best defense against extremism. Last year, the Moroccan government opened a $20 million training school in Rabat for imams. Some 500 students are from Mali and are participating in a two-year program, including instruction how to argue against calls for terrorism and jihad. Katerina Heye for VOA News, Bamako.
Yesterday was the 53rd anniversary of the day when over 30 African leaders signed the Organization of African Unity, OAU, Charter. In a message celebrating Africa Day 2016, the United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon said that the extension of the African Union theme for this year, human rights, with a particular focus on the rights of women. Horn of Africa Service reporter Salim Solomon spoke to Yebi Diallo, who is the regional coordinator of West and Central Africa at the United Nations.
Empowerment is a knowledge and advocacy platform where we actually try to bring in all these beautiful stories about women and women who are successful in the economic empowerment area, and also who can be, you know, inspiring role models for other women. It's also a knowledge platform, as I was saying before, because we try to bring in all the resources and bring in like a free space for women to grow and to be empowered.
This year's African Union theme is with a focus on human rights of women. And so what does that mean to, you know, women on the ground who you're directly working with? And what type of specific examples, if you could give me, what type of activities do you do to make sure that women are empowered?
As you already know, that Africa is currently burning with all innovation and a new breed of, if we can call them a new breed of inspiring social entrepreneurs who are committed to changing the face of Africa and bringing new and handy and practical solutions to just take the continent to the next level. So what we do, for example, at Empowerment, we have a program called the Global Champions Program, where we try to invite all these young girls and actually young men, to bring change in their communities, to lead activities, to raise awareness about human rights, how we call it, women rights are human rights, to raise awareness about women rights, about violence against women, and also about, you know, the importance of economic empowerment.
That was Yabe Diallo, Regional Coordinator of West and Central Africa at the UN Women, speaking with Horn of Africa reporter Salim Solomon. It's time now for Daybreak Africa's Pulse. Here is Marco Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. A very good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa sports news, we begin with athletics. All Africa Games champion Frank Elembe triumphed in men's shot put at the IAAF World Challenge meet in Dakar, Senegal on Wednesday. What's more, he posted a lifetime best and new Republic of Congo record of 21.01 meters. South Africa's Orazio Cremona placed third with a 19.96 meter effort. Ivory Coast's Ben Youssef Meïta clocked 20.47 seconds to win the men's 200 meters. Gambia's Adama Jammeh was second ahead of Ivory Coast's Winfred Kofi. Botswana's Lydia Jele clocked 52.18 seconds to pip Nigeria's Patience Okon and win the women's 400 meters, while Onkabetse Nkobolo of Botswana placed second in men's 400 meters. Djibouti's Abdi Waiz Muyadin clocked 3 minutes and 36.87 seconds to win men's 1500 meters ahead of Morocco's Younes Esali, then Kenya's Collins Cheboi. Margaret Chelimo Kipkemboi and Sandra Felis Chebet secured a 1-2 Kenya 3000 meter women's triumph as Feine Gudeto of Ethiopia placed third. Leru Mahaman clocked 50.06 seconds to lead Lindsay Hanekom in a 1-2 South Africa men's 400-meter hurdles victory, with Senegal's Amadou Ndiaye placed third. South Africa's Antonio Alcana and Alisa Conley were runners-up in men's 110-meter hurdles and women's 100 meters, respectively. Senegal's Mamadou Gueye and Fama Diop were third in men's long jump and women's discus, respectively, as Morocco's Lamia Labze was third in women's 400-meter hurdles. In rugby, Kenya plays Spain at the start of their campaign at the IRB Women's Sevens Tournament in the French capital, Paris, on Saturday. They will also challenge England and the United States of America in other Group A fixture. Kenya is the only African team that will have played in the Women's Sevens Series this year. In football, French tactician Luis Fernandez has resigned as coach of Guinea's national football team, Sili Nationale. The Guinea Football Federation closed in Conakry. Guinea are now in a rush against time to find a coach who will guide their team in their 2017 Orange Africa Cup of Nations qualifier against Swaziland next week. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a very good day. That's it for this Thursday, May 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Mark Ullman, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Button, Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very, very good day.
The lyrics. topics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic, etc.
It is the beat.
The African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct.
And adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on The Voice of America. Mondays through Fridays, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time.
With David Bandy.